such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey everyone, God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change. This is Father Tom Coyce on a brain-wrinkling Thursday, actually, if you're listening live. Otherwise, if you're listening on the podcast, happy whatever day it is you're listening to. Father Coyce here. I have to start with a little bit of apology. Yesterday, I was so excited about sharing a newfound passion of mine, which has never been a passion, but it seems to be now. It always seems when God is behind something, I get passionate about it. Maybe that's a good way to start. And I never really sensed when I was in school, plugging away, that in science class, there was a lot of theology. I don't think most of my teachers tried to impress on us little students that when you study science, you're knocking on the door of theology. Oh, that's crazy. And yet, it really is true. And so my new passion for cosmology, which I never had before, has been sparked by a crisis in cosmology. And I started that yesterday, actually, Wednesday, but unfortunately, darn it, as science and technology goes, we had technology problems.
Danger, Will Robinson!
The danger of depending on technology is that technology will bite you in the butt-ski if you don't watch out. And God bless all those people who work on those things to make things go smoothly, things like internet and computers that we depend on so much today. It's all part of the advances of modern technology and modern science. A lot of science goes into technology, of course. And so most of us just take all that for granted, as it were. But the reason I have a new passion for it is because it seems like God is closer than we realize. First, let me say it this way. Almost every astrophysicist or even any deep scientist worth his weight in whatever will admit that you push science to a certain extent and you're knocking on the door of philosophy. Philosophy is the love of wisdom, of course. And actually what we consider and what we would call science, you know, test tubes and chemical reactions and telescopes and microscopes and all those things, it used to be called natural philosophy. Natural philosophy, in other words, trying to come up with ideas about nature around us, as you tried to study. And there's a big difference between the olden way of doing natural philosophy, where you think about the world around us, when you think about earth, air, sky, and water, and all those kind of, and the modern sense of science that has a lot to do with experiments and probing and measuring things and trying to see deeper into the reality of a cell, of an atom, of the universe and all that. And so today, I do want to draw your attention. I got to start. Got to start with this, of course. You know what this is all about.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Okay, enough with that. Captain Kirk, William Shatner, give him credit where credit is due, right? So it is. I do want to get into cosmology here, because what sparked my curiosity and has put this passionate drive in me to learn more about what I fell asleep with in most of my high school science classes is this new. Some of these cosmologists are throwing out the proposition that you can't explain the universe without, on the one hand, first an intelligent designer, i.e. God, and we have to question even Galileo, who most of us throughout our educational life have bent over backwards defending Galileo against the church that attacked him. Of course, I've long since realized, after I read more deeply about the Galileo problem, that the church didn't primarily attack Galileo for saying that the Earth goes around the sun. Copernicus said the same thing. Copernicus did not get attacked by the church. You don't realize that in most high school or college science classes. Your atheistic leaning science teachers will tell you how bad the church treated Galileo for saying the Earth went around the sun. But they forget to tell you that Copernicus said that beforehand and didn't get punished at all by the church. The main reason why the church felt it needed to punish Galileo is because he said more than that. And what he said was that Scripture is wrong. Scripture can't be trusted because the Bible indicates that the Earth is the center and the stars and the heavens revolve around Earth. So because the Bible got that part wrong, Galileo was quick to say the Bible is not the Word of God. That was happening at the very time that Luther was going around saying, you Catholics don't accept the Bible as the Word of God. You are just a bunch of bishops who are pontificating from your collective wisdom or whatever you want to call it, you're contradicting Scripture. Obviously, we know today that Protestants will say, we'll repeat over and over again the phrase sola scriptura, that the Bible alone, Scripture alone, is the only place you will find authoritative teaching about God, and hence God includes the universe. So the Bible is the only place you'll get authoritative teaching on the universe. Well, of course, scientists scratch their head and say, don't know about that. So anyways, Galileo was punished not just for saying the Earth went around the sun, but now, thanks to...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yes, brain. I got to wrinkle your brain a little bit more, because I'm appreciating a book called Return of the God Hypothesis: Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the mind behind the universe. We'll start with the fact that I think I got to this yesterday, when I don't know how much you caught yesterday. Let's start with a new major scientific discovery that is causing a crisis in cosmology is a thing called the cosmic microwave background map. Cosmic microwave background map. What is it? Basically, it's an attempt to try to map with graphs, with recording of the oldest light in the universe. Say it that way. Trying to find out, if you stare out into deep outer space, you're going to get light. Some of that light the scientists can determine is closer than other light. How can they determine how close or far light is? By its spectrum, by its color. And the red color in the light spectrum is the weakest. So I guess in a layman's way of saying it, if you shot a flashlight, you're a mile away, someone's shining a flashlight at you, if it's a strong enough flashlight and there's no objects in the way, you'd see the light at you. It would appear white, of course, because it's strong enough. But have that light farther away and you analyze the light, the spectrum would be more red. And so scientists obviously apply that kind of logic to the distant light that they find out there. And we can find farther and farther away stars and or galaxies because we have telescopes that are floating around in outer space now. That idea that there's sort of like a rim. Imagine if you were inside a balloon and you were in the center of that balloon, and that balloon was getting bigger and bigger all around you. And the inner skin of the balloon is evidence of the cosmic microwave background. That leads to two major, shall we say, discoveries or hypotheses or facts. Might go that far. That really make the atheists mad and make us theists happy. I'll put it bluntly like that. Because the idea of seeing the cosmic microwave background map getting farther and farther away from us on Earth, pointed in any direction, you're situating the Earth in the middle of that balloon. In other words, if you're on a satellite, if you had a telescope on the moon and you pointed it north, boom, you see the cosmic microwave background noise way out there. Then you turn it south, east, west, no matter which way you pointed it. It seems like that cosmic microwave background map is just sort of a consistent distance away, and it's getting farther away. So if it's getting farther away, then that means millions of years in the past, it was closer. It was closer. And that indicates a big bang, where somewhere along the line, and even scientists will estimate the age of the universe. It's crazy how they might do that. But they do, and so that would indicate a Big Bang. And therefore, a Big Bang indicates someone who exploded it, or not only someone who caused the explosion, but someone who put the, they sometimes call it the primal egg of matter there in the first place. Now, atheistic scientists will say, well, even if there was a primal egg of dense matter, let's say 7 billion years ago, and it exploded, and the universe is expanding. One of the ways that atheistic scientists will say we don't need a God is because for all eternity, the universe has been expanding, then contracting, then expanding, then contracting, and then expanding and contracting. Though the theist cosmologists are saying, well, there's a lot of problems with that theory as well. Can't just assume that. Anyways, can we go back and let's do some preliminary scientific investigation.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, we're going to need a bigger boat, and we're going to need a bigger brain to hold all this stuff. But I'm going to try, because I'm not a scientist by training, theology, philosophy, history, scripture, all that kind of stuff is my, I'm more comfortable in that world. That's why the beginning of Star Trek seems so appropriate to me. Boldly go where no man has gone before. And to try to do a radio show about cosmology is me, your humble host, Father Coy's, I'm boldly going where he hasn't gone before. But that'll be your advantage, because as I try to digest this, I gotta try to make it simple for my brain. And if I could try to understand it in my brain, maybe I could share it with you. You know, that's the sort of the key of a good teacher, isn't it? Some people are very smart, are not good teachers, because they get frustrated with their students and just give up. And don't you see what I'm trying to tell you? And the student might say, no, I don't see it. Well, the heck with you, let's move on. It's not a good teacher. But a good teacher may not be as smart as the next smarter guy, but he's maybe a better teacher, because he's trying to bring it to the level of his listeners. So that's what I'm trying to do here. So an interesting fact that I discovered was that Galileo, with his little telescope, he starts a series of scientific investigations and what have you that lead to Newton, and then that leads to Einstein and all these other modern scientists, just by discovering that Jupiter had moons, has moons. Because he looked at Jupiter and he saw moons going around it, so he concluded that small objects go around larger objects. Okay? So that leads to
the
idea that why...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That is a brain ring. Why do smaller objects go around larger objects? Well, get you to start thinking about gravity. Well, we all know gravity exists here on Earth. We all know that you go into outer space and there's no gravity. We've all seen pictures of astronauts floating around in their space capsule. And we all know that if you're on the moon, gravity is much less. It's not as powerful of a force. You can jump higher, as we always see, because the moon is smaller than the Earth. We can deduce that gravity has something to do with mass. Mass is the word we use for the bigness or the density of something. I remember listening to Father Calloway. Do you know Father Calloway of the Divine Word, Divine Mercy priests out there in Stockdale, Massachusetts, a beautiful and wonderful group. And in his conversion story, if you ever get a chance to listen to his conversion story, it's called No Turning Back. He grew up as an Air Force brat. His mother was married maybe three times, four times. And the father that stuck with his mother longest was in the Air Force. He grew up in Japan and was just a wild, crazy, sex, drug, and rock and roll kind of teenager. His father especially tried to straighten him out, but he rebelled terribly. He got mixed up with the Japanese mafia, you could call it, drug dealers and all the rest. He was in and out of jail, I think. Anyways, when he saw something about, I'm pretty sure it was apparitions at Medjugorje, and he started learning a little bit about religion, and somebody asked him, "Did you ever go to a mass?" And the funniest thing, he says, "I had no idea what they were talking about when they said, do you know what the mass is?" He thought he was a mathematical equation, because probably somewhere in his science class or math class, he discovered the word mass. Well, anyways, we're not going to talk about the mass like we go to mass on Sunday with the priest and all that, but we're going to stick with the topic of mass as that word that scientists use for material, the density, the weight of a bowling ball, or the moon, or the earth, or the sun, everything that has material makeup, you could say, is mass. So Newton's thinking about the idea of mass, and he connects the idea of gravity with the earth's mass. And so he says, as he's looking up at the sky, that the moons of Jupiter are held in place by the mass of the larger mother planet. So he concludes that in this debate, the debate about whether the Earth is in the center of the solar system or universe or it's not, he concludes, well, neither the Earth nor the Sun are in the center of the universe, because the universe is pretty darn big. And how do we don't know that the Earth or the Sun is the center of mass. Like anywhere on the moon, you're going to be pulled. Gravity is, in a sense, the power of that massive body known as the moon or the Earth pulling you down. And you're always going to be pulled to the center of that mass. So all the motions of the planets in the universe, they're all moving about. We assume and we see them moving. He comes up with the idea that neither the Earth nor the Sun are in the center of the universe. But of course, he agrees that the Earth is going around the Sun. So okay, let me just pause there. That's my introduction for today. Okay, folks, let's take our first break. And then I gotta try to explain how all this stargazing has led to Einstein's theory of relativity. It's a brain scratcher. And if I can help you understand it just a little bit, I don't pretend to explain it completely. But if you can understand a little bit, you will be amazed at the universe. Hence, you will be amazed at God. And you will be surprised at why some cosmologists are now saying that the Earth is in the center of the universe. But not because they believe it from the Bible, but because it's a good explanation from the phenomenon, from the observable facts that they are gazing at, as it were. Okay, so let's take our first break. I'm Father Tom Coyes. I'm a guest host on The Winds of Change. You're listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI 88.5 FM, and WNDZ 750 AM.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more. providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
Sometimes it's tough to hear winds of change over the air. What with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button, or visit Winds of Change Facebook page to see the Listen Live link.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom here. We are exploring new lands to explore outer space in order to appreciate our faith more. And what I want many of my listeners you to take away is some key questions or key facts that you can share with, especially those who are falling away from the faith, that are tend to be more, put their faith more in science than in religion. And that's most people who fall away from the faith. There are people who fall away from the Catholic faith and go to a kind of a spiritualist. So some of these scientific points won't move them in one way or another, but it might move those who are still clinging to the idea that there's a lot of things to learn about the universe around us. Okay, so we got Newton with his theory of gravity, and he kind of spells that out in a famous book called Principium Mathematicum. That was in 1687. So let's see, that was a little bit after the Protestant Reformation, a little bit before the American Revolution. Anyway, so he's coming up with these ideas. The idea that gravity will suck something to it, the center of the mass. So he could apply that to the universe, and you could say, well, if it's true about a man jumping up and down on the moon or a man jumping up and down on the earth, they're going to be pulled toward the center, then wouldn't that be true about the universe, that there can and there should be a center of mass in the universe around which all things are revolving? Okay. So he posits the concept of absolute space. Sounds like kind of a strange thing, right? Absolute space. What does that mean? That means that if, when you look at all the points out there in space, there is a set. There's a set playing field out there, and there's a set. There's a set center. Leaving aside the question of whether the outward boundary of space is expanding or not, he doesn't even get to that yet, but by realizing there must be a center of it, then that means absolutely you can speak in terms of up and down, left and right. Of course, that's a concept that was ridiculed. Say, no, the opposite of absolute space would be, I guess you could call it, relative space, that there really is no up and down, left or right, north or south out there in space, because all space is relative to other bodies. You could say Pluto is to the left of Jupiter, but you can't say that it's higher than Jupiter. It depends on where the bottom is, right? In order to have the concept of up and down, you got to have some sense. So anyways, that's Newton's theory of absolute space comes from his meditation, his thinking about what gravity is and that gravity works here on this planet. We learn a lot about gravity here. So you could expand that to the whole universe. But he also realizes that it's not the only force. Gravity is pulling something, but there must be some other force working against it, right? Because the gravity would, let's go back to our man jumping on the moon. Obviously, the gravity of the moon is pulling the guy down, but when you jump up, you do come down. So that's the gravity. But if gravity was the only force, then you wouldn't even be able to jump up, in a sense. That there's motion creates a different force. And there's this famous spinning bucket experiment where he's sitting in his room or laboratory, and he has a bucket full of water on a rope, and he spins the bucket around, and he notices that the water climbs up the sides of the bucket. So he realizes motion creates a force that acts on matter. It's a pulling or a pushing away from the center of mass. So if the planets are spinning, so the spinning also adds a force to that mass. And obviously, you can sort of see where he's going. If all the planets are spinning around the sun, that spinning would then make the planets just go flying out into outer space beyond their orbits. So there's the force that's pushing the planets out, and there's the force that's pulling it in. And that's why the orbits stay kind of constant. That's actually one of the new discoveries, or that's one of the things that lead theistic scientists to say, gosh, if the distances of the planets toward the sun, especially the distance of the Earth toward the sun, was just a little bit farther or a little bit closer, we wouldn't have life at all. That's a crazy... Okay, and we'll get to that eventually, my friends. So back to this debate going on about the Earth going around the sun, planets going around other things. You know, remember that Galileo, back in the 1600s, he did notice that Jupiter had moons, but his telescopes were not strong enough for him to know the difference between a star out there that was a star and a galaxy. Now our telescopes are powerful enough we could look up, and what we might see on a clear night is, we call it a star, but if you had a really good telescope, you could, no, that's not a star, that's a galaxy made up of millions and billions of stars. So, we're going to go back with this little post-Newton time. Enter Ernest Mach. Another scientist, Ernest Mach. He's sort of the precursor to Einstein. He kind of paved the way for Einstein. This Ernest Mach is the guy we get the word Mach 1, Mach 2, Mach 3, in terms of a denomination of speed, right? A jet will go Mach 1, which is 761 miles an hour, I think. A plane going Mach 2 is 500 miles an hour. That's pretty fast, but not as fast as the speed of light, okay? So Mach comes up with the idea that when it comes to observing motion, all motion is relative. So that's a little bit different than what Newton came up with, that with this absolute space. So he's going to say, no, we got that all motion is relative. You can't determine something going fast or slow or up or down unless you compare it to another thing that's not going that fast. So applying the idea of the relative nature of motion with the Earth, he's going to come up with this crazy idea, whether the Earth is spinning around the sun or the Earth is stationary and the stars, the sun, and everything else are moving around the Earth, the observable motion will look the same. And I got to say, that's a strange thing to say, isn't it? But this is going to be the foundation of why some scientists are prepared to postulate. They don't know for sure, but it's as good of an explanation as anything else. I couldn't really get my head around what he's talking about with this motion is relative. But here's what makes me seem to grasp it in my simple way. If you consider a man standing in the middle of the room, right? And let's say the walls in the room start spinning around, but you are stationary, and you try to figure out how fast those walls are spinning around, and you determine they're going around at 4 miles an hour, 5 miles an hour. Is it very good? Okay. Now take that same situation, and you're standing on a little platform that's spinning around in the center of the room, but the walls are stationary. Let's say it's a circular room, right? So to the observer, the observation will look the same. That's strange. And, you know, that hit me is because sometimes we say, I felt like the room was spinning around me. Sometimes if we get dizzy, right? We say, I feel like the room is spinning around me. Well, we know the room is not spinning around you. Something's going on with your head, as it were. Or another example could be if you're at a racetrack. I've been down to Daytona 500 to see one of my friends, Johnny Sauter, who was part of the Sauter family NASCAR gang, and he was nice enough to let us into the pits. And you're in the middle of the racetrack. Well, not the exact middle, but when you're in the pits, you're around the rim of the racetrack. But if you were in the middle of the racetrack and you saw the cars zipping around you, let's say you were taking a video of it and you were trying to determine this speed, you would take, okay, from this point to that point, it took how many seconds or fraction of a second, and then you could determine the speed of the racetrack going around you. The race car going around you. But if you did continued the same analogy, if you were in the middle of the racetrack and you were spinning around, let's say the race car was going around the track at 100 miles an hour and you determined it would be 100 miles an hour. Now turn it around, put you in the center of the racetrack and you are spinning around at 100 miles an hour, but the racetrack car is stationary. If you were filming it, it would look the exact same. That's what this motion is relative thing is all about. And what's also we're all about is getting in our breaks here, right, Nick? I'm going to keep going with this. I got to try to get you to my layman's interpretation or trying to understand Einstein's theory of relativity. Boy, I'll put a big goal in front of you there and see if I make that makes some sense and some reasons why some people are questioning it and why some of those questions are leading to that theory, that hypothesis that maybe the Earth is in the center of the universe. My goodness. Okay, I'm Father Tom Coyes. I'm guest host on The Winds of Change. As you know, you are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM and WNZ NDZ 750 AM.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Listeners to Catholic radio, I think, benefit most, at least initially, from what I call remedial catechesis. What Catholic radio does is it becomes an echo chamber for the teaching authority of the Catholic Church. And what we're doing is teaching many things which have been neglected over the last 40, 50 years. If you listen to Catholic radio, you know what the Catholic Church teaches.
Al Cresta thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm trying to wrinkle your brain with some cosmology and science. Before I get to the connection between Newton and Ernest Mach and Einstein, to put this in theological and ethical terms, which are connected, a lot of times people don't see them as connected, but they are, especially through the idea of order in the universe. And after all this wondering about whether the Earth is in the center of the universe or that it's not, or how things move, that's all about order in the universe. And the intricate details, everything, 1,000 different possibilities had to be exactly right in order for there to be life at all on planet Earth. That's another aspect of this scientific discoveries that are giving more credence to us believers in God. And as I say, I want my listeners, especially to have a couple of takeaways for your less than religious friends and relatives. One of them being the cosmic microwave background map. How familiar are you with the cosmic microwave background map? I would imagine most wouldn't know anything about it, but you can explain. It's a map of the oldest and farthest away light in the universe. Scientists are able to map, and there is a rim of that oldest light in all directions away from the Earth. What do you say about that, my friends? Or do you recognize the idea of gravity being connected to the mass of something? Everybody will, if they think a little bit about it, say, well, yes, of course, gravity is connected to the mass of something. Then is there a center of gravity in the universe? Where might be the center of gravity in the universe? What is that point around which everything else is revolving? The theory that, going back to Galileo, that saw the moons going around Jupiter, and all that he could come up with is that small objects rotate around large objects. But it's not necessarily small objects around large objects. It's objects around the center of gravity. So it's possible that a small object doesn't matter what size the object is in order for it to be right at the center of gravity. And so this cosmic microwave background map with a distant light indicates a kind of circular universe going away from the Earth that lends itself to the idea that the Earth might be the center. of the universe. And also the fact that even though we all know that the Earth is not the largest object in the universe, it doesn't have to be the largest object in the universe to be the center of the universe if it's the center of gravity. See, it's amazing. Okay, I played this yesterday, and whether or not you heard or not, it's worth repeating. This is from Star Trek Discovery. This is season four, episode 13. It's the ending of season four, I guess. And the Federation of Galaxies, or the Federation of civilizations, are trying to get Earth back into the Federation. I guess the in our world, in our time, empire building is bad. Today actually is the feast of Henry II. Saint Henry II was one of the emperors of the Holy Roman Empire, and a very holy, righteous guy who was not afraid of church, religion, God. He saw the beautiful partnership between civil authority and religious authority, and help strengthen the church, where we live in an era where, number one, any inkling of empire building seems terrible, even though now NATO is trying to grow its empire status. People don't see that. People fluctuate on this over and over again. So in the TV show Star Trek Discovery, the Federation is trying to get Earth back into the Federation. And so it's a slippery, subtle heresy that you need to see. So listen to this little episode where the president of Earth has united sufficiently enough to have one president. Talk about George Soros and the World Federation. Globalism takes it literally here, assuming that there's other galaxies with other civilizations and everything. But still, the problem is the same, and the seductive heresy is the same. See if you can hear it. This is how it goes.
Define the Federation in pieces. Quadrants and sectors, planets and families divided. So much uncertainty and disconnection. But the burn and the DMA have shown us that we are all connected, and we can.
The DNA has showed us all the creatures of the universe are connected. Well, we've kind of said that about human beings on planet Earth too. Anyway, so that's not the heresy.
And overcome any challenge, so long as we do it together. And we can overcome any challenge, so long as we do it together. So that we are all connected. And we can overcome any challenge, so long as we do it together.
We can overcome any challenge, so far as long as we do it together.
Yeah. The Federation is continuing to help impacted worlds recover. Many have since joined us. Their perspectives are helping us all see more clearly. Navarre is back. Teller Prime never left. And Doria is now in talks. And today, we greet the president of United Earth.
And of course, the president of the United Earth is played by Stacey Abrams, a black woman, just to continue the idea that there's nothing wrong with the idea of a black person being president of anything or any situation or even a woman. However, the idea that they united the earth, how did they do that? We don't know, but it's assumed. And now that the president of Earth is going to put herself back into the Federation with all these other aliens with their funny ears and faces and all the rest. Oh my goodness, I'm looking at the video here, and one of the women, presidents of some civilization, is dressed. She's in black, but her collar is just like a priest's collar, with a little white thing under her chin, as it were. You know, science is always trying to. It always has this. Well, not always, but dominantly sees itself as opposing religion. It's a sad thing, and that's why I'm passionate about this new cosmology that really trying to use science against the atheists, because they're coming up. Okay, so we left with the idea that the cosmic radio microwave background and the theories of gravity are kind of like saying, well, that leaves the idea that the Earth is in the center of the universe. But of course, atheistic scientists have to reject that. So one of the ways they reject that is to reject the idea of absolute space, which carries with it a kind of motion. You can determine the motion. Or the atheistic scientists say you're not going to be able to. You can see where Einstein is going to come in there and his theory of relativity. Einstein's theory of relativity really was born out of this question about, does the Earth go around the sun? Where is the center of gravity? Where is the center of the universe? All that. We got two new scientists in between Newton and Einstein. You might recognize these names, but most of us lay people don't. Michelson and Morley. It's a combination. Michelson and Morley decided they're taking these things seriously. Okay, if we're talking about motion in the universe and Earth going around the sun and all that kind of stuff, he says we should be able to measure the speed of the Earth around the sun, right? Kind of makes sense. If we're going to believe that the Earth is going around the sun, which I kind of assume, right? But we know what the seasons are. Okay, so if it's going around the sun, then we should be able to figure out how fast is it going around the sun, just like you could figure out how fast a race car is going around the racetrack, right? So Michelson and Morley, they accept on the theory by a physicist by the name of Maxwell, and that his theory of space is filled with some kind of matter. In other words, space out there is not just void of everything. It's not just absolute space in the sense that it has no particles, it has no atoms, etc. So he says, we know it's not dust, like we would call dust on the Earth, but he does come up with a theory that space must have some kind of dust. You can call it space dust, or he called it ether. He called it ether. He proposed the idea that space has ether in it. In other words, it's some kind of matter sprinkled all throughout space. Maxwell's theory of this space, he was primarily looking through the microscope, not so much the telescope, and he's most famous for discovering things about how electrons move around in atoms, you know, around the nucleus and everything. He's famous as the electrodynamics, the father of electrodynamics. How do electrons dynamically dance? So the Earth's motion, now back to Michelson and Morley, they're going to say, well, the Earth's motion will create a kind of wake, like a boat through water, right? If you're going through ether, and the Earth's wake around the sun should affect the speed of light. So if you shoot a beam of light with the current created by the Earth's movement or shoot a beam of light against the current, compare the speeds and you'll get some sense of speed. Even though it'd be a tiny, 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 tiny fraction of a second, right? Because light goes pretty fast. In the book by Stephen Meyer, he uses the example of an Olympic swimmer. If you have an Olympic swimmer who can swim 7 miles an hour, I think that'd be a pretty fast swimmer. And that swimmer was put in water in a river. If that Olympic swimmer was swimming as 10 miles an hour with the current, he would be going faster than if he were swimming against the current. There's a force acting against him. So that's the theory. So that's the Michelson-Morley experiment to try to capture the speed of the Earth. But they were disappointed because they couldn't find any speed of the Earth, no matter which direction they shot their light beam.
Wow.
Away from the Earth.
Wrinkle my brain, man.
It does wrinkle your brain. Or behind, behind the Earth as it's moving around the sun, or left, right, didn't matter which way. They couldn't find any difference, so they had to conclude that the speed of the Earth is zero. That doesn't make any sense. Because if the speed of the Earth is zero, what does that mean? Is the Earth in the middle of the universe again? Earth is the sun is going around the Earth? So Michelson and Morley had to either reject the ether theory altogether. Space doesn't have any matter, doesn't create a wake in any way, or they say the Earth isn't orbiting the sun. Gee. That contradicts Galileo and what everybody believed, so they ended up rejecting the idea of space is completely empty space, nothing out there. oh my goodness, we're almost... Now here enters Albert Einstein. Let me just whet your appetite. I have to pick up on this another time, because I find this stuff fascinating. And as a matter of fact, it's fascinating, and as a priest, as a believer, because all these scientists knocking around these ideas. Again, it's fascinating as a believer because it's like the Earth, the universe around me is screaming that there's a God in it. And it goes beautifully with the idea that something different between Catholics and Protestants. Catholics have always said there's a fourth, or you could say a fifth gospel, or there's a different form of revelation. Protestants, of course, believe there's four gospels and there's only one Bible. And if you believe in sola scriptura, that's the only place you get truth, the truth about God. Catholics have always said nature is like another gospel. It's the fifth gospel. It's a kind of Bible in itself. It's a different form of revelation. So Einstein comes in and tries to figure this out, and he's going to try to explain how mass and energy are convertible terms. What the heck is that all about? And it makes me think of, as a philosopher, how Thomas Aquinas said that being and goodness are convertible terms. I'll leave you with that brain-wrinkling message. Hopefully you'll pick this up. And, again, we marvel at the universe around us. God made it, and we are special. We're not just stardust. We are made in the image and likeness of God. God bless you for listening. This has been Father Tom Coyes on the Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM and WNDZ AM 750. See you tomorrow.
but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred.